Hare Krishna. So I would like to welcome you to the sixth session of ours on the science of self-realization, the essence of the Gita. Yesterday we discussed about the five topics that are elaborated on the Bhagavad Gita, and an understanding of which helps us in seeing everything in proper perspective, or rather in answering that question as to why do bad things happen to good people or vice versa. We discussed how these five topics are an understanding of Ishvara, who is the controller, Jiva, what is the living entity, what is Prakriti, material nature, what is Kala, the time factor, how does it influence, and what is Karma, or the science of activity. And we discussed about different kinds of karma. Pious activity or good karma, which is according to scriptures, impious activity or bad karma, which is prohibited in the scriptures, and ultimately, whether good or bad, they are both binding. Because either to enjoy the reaction or to suffer the reaction, you have to be born again in the material world, and to be born means getting old, disease, death, and other miseries thereof follows. And therefore, the real purpose is not to get entangled in this, but to do those activities which does not give any reaction in the future, and simultaneously it burns away the previous reactions of the past. And that is akarma. Akarma means activities which don't give reaction. And we discussed about how, an example of how, when a person fights on the authority, higher authority of the government, then the government take the responsibility for all the reactions, and they are liberated. They are actually not only awarded or not only given, there is no reaction for the action performed in terms of punishment, etc., but rather their previous records of anything is also forgotten, and they are awarded a medal for actually surrendering to the government. So in this way, when activities are performed on the basis of scriptures for the pleasure and satisfaction of the Lord, then not only is it not entangling us in future, but because of that, even the past reactions is completely wiped out. And therefore, what remains is a clean slate. Therefore, there is nothing to suffer or to enjoy in this world, and such a person is fit for liberation or achieving the perfection of life, ultimate perfection of life. And that is what is called as yoga. And we concluded as to how human life is a preparation and death is the examination. If at the time of death, if we have a clean slate in this regard, in terms of reactions, good or bad, then a person is fit to go back to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, where there is no more anxiety. So today, we will be discussing about yoga, what are the different types of yoga, and what is the topmost yoga system as recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Tasmad Yogi Bhavarjuna. He implores Krishna to become a yogi. It's very interesting that using Krishna, using Arjuna as an instrument, he is requesting every conditioned soul, if you really want to achieve the perfection of life, become a yogi. Tapasvibhyo dhiko yogi, jnanibhyopi mato dhikaha, karmibhyascha dhiko yogi, tasmad yogi bhavarjuna. A position of a yogi is higher than a tapasvi, higher than a jnani, higher than a karmi, or one who performs activities. Therefore, O Arjun, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Of course, Arjuna was the best of yogi, but using Arjuna as an instrument, he is requesting all of us, is imploring all of us to become a yogi, which is the ultimate perfection of life. Now, next. You don't have the today's? Today I got it done. Radhaditi did not give you? I sat for 2 hours to make this. You send someone to get it. So, before we actually understand what is yoga, let's actually try to understand. No, let's just keep this. Before we try to understand what is yoga, it's important to understand what it is not. Because ultimately, this word yoga, as any other words, Sanskrit words, dharma, etc., has been so much misused that there are so many misconceptions that prevails in the minds of people as to what this terminology yoga is. Therefore, let's see what it is not first. It is not some mere physical exercise for... Can you show down, Prabhu? I think you should keep this aside. Don't worry. Just show this. It is too distracting. The subject matter itself is... And if we just, keep moving the screen. It's not simply a mere physical exercise for a shapely body. Sometimes people think yoga for health. And you see, someone in a lettered and the exercise going on, aerobic exercises. And the title says yoga for health. So, it's not just as some exercise for a shapely body or some good health or increased sense gratification. People think that yoga means, in fact, there was a magazine which actually made this point that do yoga for improved sex life. The idea being that you do yoga and you get good health so that you can enjoy this world more, enjoy your senses more, and not get diseased. So the idea defeats what it is actually meant for. So it's not simply some exercise for improved sense gratification. Or sometimes people have this conception that yoga means some emaciated person in the Himalayas, long beard, maybe some anthill growing up. That is yoga. That means one who has renounced everything, gone to the Himalayas, and then performing austerities there. But actually, none of this is yoga. It's not all of these. Or sometimes people think yoga means for improved lifespan. Long life you live. It is a fact. Death is determined, or life is determined by the number of breaths. And if you control your breath, you can live a little longer life. It's not the number of years, but number of breaths. But that is a mere byproduct. So what is yoga? Actually, yoga comes from the root word yuj. You have that? Yeah. So Krishna says one must become a yogi. Next. It's not simply for a shapely body, for good health or increased sense gratification or increased lifespan. There are some trees in America, California. There are trees, sequoia trees, which live for 5,000 years. That's not life for increased lifespan until and unless there is some quality. Next. It's not for some mystic power that you elevate yourself from the ground. Because as regards that, even birds are flying in the air. They are better yogis than us. They have not performed any yoga to fly in the air. Or the frogs jump higher, the grasshoppers also jump up. So, trying to elevate ourselves few feet from the ground, walking on water or flying in the air, these kind of mystic powers are not what is yoga. Nor is it some emaciated, completely renunciate in meditation, leaving everything and going to the Himalayas. So there are so many misconceptions that immediately comes to our mind when we use this word yoga. Then what is yoga? Actually, yoga comes from the word yuj. Yuj dhatu, the verbal root yuj. And yuj means to unite. Yoga means union. Union of what with what? Actually, yoga means union in love between individual consciousness and supreme consciousness. Or in other words, living entity and God. As we were discussing the day before yesterday, all the living entities, Jivatma, the soul, is part and parcel of God. One in quality with God, but minute in quantity. Just like this finger is a part of the body, all the living entities are part of God, part of Krishna. But since time immemorial, we have forgotten our relationship with the Lord. Thinking ourselves to be independent of Lord, we are trying to become controllers, proprietors, and enjoyers of this material world, which actually belongs to God and who himself is the original controller, proprietor, and enjoyer. As long as we stay away in this consciousness, actually we are never separate. Just that the finger is never separate from the body. We are never separate from the Lord. There is a spiritual connection. But when we forget our connection and think ourselves independent because of illusion, that is the degraded situation of the living entity. And the whole purpose of yoga is to reunite, or rather reawaken. It's already there, the connection is there. To reawaken our connection with God. That is called yoga. And therefore, yogi is a person whose life and activities are oriented towards re-establishing his relationship with God. That is yoga. Yoga means those kinds of thoughts, words, activities which is geared towards re-establishing our natural, original relationship with God. If that is not there, then some people say, I am a karma yogi, I am a jnana yogi, I am a ashtanga yogi, I am a bhakti yogi. But the word yogi means God must be there. If you do karma, if you are working hard day and night, but if there is no God in picture, then that is not karma yoga. Even donkeys are doing a lot of hard work. But that is not karma yoga, because they don't understand for whom he is doing that work. Many people are big scholars, but they are not jnana yogi, because they don't know what is the purpose of knowledge, whom to understand. Devotion may be for the country, devotion may be for anyone, but until and unless bhakti is flowing towards our ultimate source, that is not bhakti yoga. Therefore, yoga means complete understanding of God must be there, and the endeavor should be to reunite our relationship. If these two things are not there, if the purpose of all those activities is not to re-establish our relationship, then it is not yoga. It is bhoga. Enjoying. That's all. So, let's try to understand. There are so many kinds of people. First of all, of the 84 lakh species, very few are human beings. Only 4 lakh species are human beings. 80 lakh species are of different varieties. They have no access to achieve yoga. Of the human beings, there are different levels also. There are people who have no understanding of God. They are atheists. They don't believe in God. And they have no morals also. They live a very sinful life. Then there are people who are atheists, but they live a very moral life. Moral life means, what is morality without God? Morality means, let me do what feels good for me, and let me avoid what I feel bad. And therefore, morality means, you also do something that I don't feel bad, and I will also do something that you don't feel bad. And that is a law. That is morality. But then this morality is very relative. Because what is moral in one country may be immoral in another. What is moral 500 years ago, or what was moral 50 years ago, is today considered immoral. Or what was considered immoral rather 50 years ago, is today considered moral. Something like abortion was unheard of 50, 60 years ago. Today it's normal. Divorce was considered unimaginable few years ago, even in the Western world 100 years ago. It happened only in the movies, film actors, but not in the families. Today it's a completely natural affair. In fact, it's considered perfectly moral. You don't like it, all right, you can just separate and, you know, go along. So, the standard of morality is very, very relative. And therefore, and not only that, sometimes you could do sinful activity in a small scale and think that it is perfectly moral. Someone may say, see, I drink liquor, but I drink only, you know, one little peg just before going to bed. Of my own money, I don't drink from others' money. And I just sleep, I don't trouble anyone. I don't eat too much meat. Just take some egg or sometimes chicken, party, you know, you have to please people. That's moral, because as long as you don't spend others' money, you don't get so intoxicated to create a nuisance. They are considered absolutely moral people, even though they have no idea of who God is. So there are atheists, immoralists, sinful people, and atheists, moralists. But as long as God is not in the center, all that morality is useless. Because it keeps on changing, it's relative. Therefore, real morality cannot come without understanding of God. Only a clear understanding of God and His law. Because what is morality? Morality is the standard of activity by which the supreme authority is satisfied. The supreme authority is God. If God is not satisfied, even though you may do so-called moral act of this world, it's all immoral in His eyes. Because His law is absolute. So therefore, there are two kinds of human beings. Those who abide by the laws of God and those who break the laws of God. So, all those who break the laws of God, they can never understand what yoga is. Very few actually abide by the laws of God. And amongst them who abide by the laws of God, there are various categories. Those who do karma or activities according to the law, those who accumulate jnana according to the jnana, they accumulate jnana, knowledge, or do some ashtanga yoga, and then there is bhakti. There are four categories. And amongst those who do karma or activities, there are two types. Sakama and nishkama. Kama means material desire. Sakama means with desire, with material desire. And nishkama means without material desire. So, this yoga is like a ladder. From sakama to nishkama to jnana to ashtanga to bhakti. Some people have an idea. They think that yoga are different yogas are different types. You are doing karma yoga, I am doing jnana, he is doing ashtanga, he is doing bhakti. No. Actually, yoga means it's like a ladder. And different rungs on the ladder are called by different names. Like education. Education means from nursery to PhD. It's all education. But if you pass till fifth and drop out, then you are called, you are a primary school education finished. Or education bracket SSLC, higher secondary. If you remain there, then you become a higher secondary fellow. But if you pass out, then you become a graduate, postgraduate, doctorate. They are all on the same path. So yoga is a ladder, and different rungs on the ladder are called by different names. So this is just a brief description. Now, we will take these one by one and discuss. Those who break the law, what are their characteristics? Those who follow the law, what are their gradations? These are actually the reverse order. From the lowest rung, sakama karma, to nishkama, to jnana, ashtanga and bhakti. We will discuss that briefly before discussing the topmost yoga system. So first, let us take those who break the law and therefore are not in this picture. Next. Yeah. These are the hard-working materialistic people. Now, why do we use the word he's a very materialistic person? What does that mean? A materialist is he who thinks that matter is all in all. This body is all in all. He doesn't know, he doesn't care about existence of soul, existence of life after death, existence of God, what to speak of spiritual world. He thinks that this body is all in all and whatever I get in hand is what is all in all. Bas. This is his understanding. And therefore, he works only for the body and its enjoyment. And works very hard to accumulate lots so that he can enjoy his senses more and more. Such a person is called materialist, materialistic person. What are their characteristics? As we have already discussed on the first day, they are sophisticated animals. I'm sorry to use a very strong word, but that's the fact. Because the animals only know how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. And if our whole goal of life is how to eat nicely, how to sleep nicely, how to mate nicely, how to defend nicely, and if we don't inquire about higher realms of life, then we are only sophisticated, polished, well-dressed, two-legged animals and nothing more. Working hard as much as any of the animals, but then not understanding the goal, where are we going? And whether that situation can give us happiness. The animals don't understand. They're working on instinct and they don't know whether that can give them happiness or not. So that inquiry is not there. They are conditioned to the bodily concept of life. They think that the body is all in all. To keep the body healthy, nice and beautiful is the goal of life. They are never bothered about the soul. And when someone takes to spiritual life, they call them crazy. They say, you are crazy. Why are you wasting your time unnecessarily on things which has not been proved, on things which is imagination, on things that don't exist? So the materialists call the spiritualists crazy, and the spiritualists call the materialists crazy. Now there is a question, who is crazy then? These people say they are crazy, these people say they are crazy. Both are calling each other crazy. Let us objectively analyze what is craziness. Now, if you go to a place, an institution, an asylum where all crazy people are kept, some mental hospital, what is the most striking prominent feature that you see? One striking common feature of all the people who are put in the mental hospital, of all these crazy people are, the first and foremost thing is, they have lost a sense of identity. One fellow may be standing on the table and lecturing, and ask him who you are, he says, you don't understand, I'm the Prime Minister of India. And today is the 15th of August, I'm giving address to the nation on the Red Fort. Okay, sir. Thank you. There was one girl in the US, one of our visitors, guests told me, this girl used to take some drugs. And whenever she would take an overdose, she would actually think herself to be a bird. And she would go tweeting around the college corridors. And everyone thought it was very funny. Until one day she had such a big dose that she was convinced 100% that she's a bird. So she went to the top floor of the college and decided to fly from there. Ultimately, she had to be taken to the lunatic asylum. Why? What is the prominent feature of crazy people? A crazy man is he who doesn't know who he is, or rather, who thinks what he is not. Now, let us decide, who are we? Are we the body or are we the soul? If you are the body, when the person is dead, why don't you embrace the body? Why don't you nourish and care for the body and keep it in your home? Why do you want to burn that body for whom you loved him so much, you loved him or her so much? If a little fire touched the finger, then you spend hundreds of rupees to care for it. And today, you are putting fire right in the mouth of that person. And under the, on the pyre, you are just lighting it. If that is you, then why are you burning him? Are we the body? This is to be thought. If we are the body, then to do something for the soul is a waste of time. But if you are not the body, if you are the soul, then to be totally absorbed 24 hours a day only in caring for the body and being totally oblivious to the needs of the soul is actually craziness. Therefore, we have to decide who we are. Are we the body or are we the soul? And then we have to act accordingly. The materialistic people don't believe in the existence of soul, in the existence of rebirth, God, or the spiritual world. Anything spirit, anything spiritual, they have no appreciation, no regard, no respect, and no understanding. And therefore, they think that the body is everything and the goal of life is to enjoy the senses. Next. And they don't discriminate between pious and sinful activity. For them, what gives them pleasure, that is a good activity. And whatever gives them pain is an impious activity. If enjoying the senses is pleasure, very good. That is a good activity. Their philosophy is written on their t-shirt also. Just do it. You feel like it? Just do it. Don't care what the world says, what God says, what your elders say. Who cares what society says, what tradition says? Hell with it. You feel like? Just do it. Sounds very nice. Right? So pleasing. Just do it. Whatever you want, eat. Whatever you want, do. Wherever you want, you do it. However you want, do it. That's an animal. The animals don't discriminate whether they are standing in the middle of the street or they are standing in the corner. When they get the urge to do something, they do it. The dog suddenly stands, feels like passing stool, he passes right there in the center of the street. He sees a female dog, he just follows. Shamelessly, doesn't consider, you know, who is watching and is it right or wrong. Today we see in the cities, literally such a situation. People are completely unaware of the surroundings. They just give vent to their feelings of the lower modes. Not bothering about whether people around are looking or caring or concerned. Nothing. I feel like I do it. That's my life. That is called Charvak philosophy. This is not something new. This philosophy has been existing since a long time. But only thing is, earlier time, less people were following. Now, very less people don't follow it. Or rather, very less people are away from it. That's the only difference. Charvak. Vak means speech. Char means very sweet. Their philosophy sounds so pleasing to the senses. So what did Charvak say? Rinam kritva ghritam pivet. Yavat jivet sukham jivet. Beg, borrow or steal, but live life king size. This is like the phrase of modern world. Do anything you want, beg, borrow or steal, but enjoy life as much as you can, as long as you can, to the best of your ability. And somebody may say, what about sinful reactions? What about rebirth? You may go to the lower species. You go to hell. What is their answer? In next part of the verse. Bhasmi bhutasya dehasya punaragamanam kutaha. The whole body will be turned to a fist of ashes. Who has seen rebirth? Have you seen the soul? Have you seen God? Have you seen spiritual world? Come on, forget it. As long as you are alive, enjoy life. Don't care about tomorrow. Today is life. So, bhasmi bhutasya dehasya. That is their understanding. When the body is finished, everything is finished. Therefore, enjoy life as much as possible. They make futile attempts at being the controller enjoyer. They try, but they become most miserable when at the time of death or old age, everything that they strived for starts collapsing right in front of them. Just like if you go to a sea beach. This is a very common sight. I have seen it. If you go to a sea beach, parents come and sit behind and allow their children to go near the beach where the waves are coming and the sand is wet. And generally what children do, they go and start making a huge sand castle of the wet sand. Right near the shore, they start making a sand castle, huge. And then the two children sit on two corners and start making a doorway from this side and from that side. And when their hands meet inside the castle, then they shake their hands. Successful, we have constructed a huge sand castle. And in this way, they start decorating it and making roadways and so many things. These children are so absorbed in playing, making this sand castle, that they are completely oblivious to the fact that slowly, because of high tide, the waves are coming closer and closer and closer. Now you see this. It just comes and goes and comes and goes. And then one ill-fated wave, a big one, comes. And when it goes back, they see that all their efforts for so many hours flat in one moment. And then, out of frustration and disappointment, they start kicking their hands and legs and crying loudly. And for consolation, they look at their parents, and the parents are smiling. They're very angry. What is this? They don't love us. So much of hard work, everything finished in one moment, and they're smiling at us. But that's the situation of all of us, of this childish mentality to think that we are only body. Jesus Christ said, build your house not on sand but on solid rock. What he meant was this. If we build our castle on sand, that means temporary body, the ill-fated wave will come and finish off. Actually, every rising and setting of the sun is like one wave that is coming closer and closer. And one day, the wave will come which will take away the essence, the foundation of this whole sand castle, that is the human body itself. But when he said build it on rock, build it on something permanent, something eternal, and that is the soul. And anyone who builds on the platform of soul, that is eternal. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, don't make futile attempts at trying to build anything on the platform of the body. Moghasha, mogha karmano, mogha jnana, vichetasaha. Moghasha, all your hopes will become hopeless, baffled. Mogha karma, all your endeavors will be finished at the time of death. And all your so-called knowledge of how to exploit this material world will be finished at the time of death. Therefore, an intelligent man should not simply while away his time disregarding the scriptures, which are the laws of God, which are very stringent. You can't escape the laws of God. The mills of God grind slowly but exceedingly fine. They are infallible. They have to act today or tomorrow, sooner or later. Next. Then there are those who abide by the scriptures. Now, amongst those who abide by the scriptures, there are different kinds of people. There are those who abide by the scriptures, no doubt, but they follow the scriptures so that they can enjoy better facilities in this world. Same like the materialists, but instead of disregarding the scriptures, they follow the scriptures. And in the scriptures, there is mention of so many worship of demigods. And it is said, if you want to enjoy better health, you have to worship this person, Surya. If you want to get a good wife, you have to worship Uma. If you want a good husband, you have worship Lord Shiva. If you want to get a good wife, worship Uma, Parvati. If you want beauty, worship Ashwini Kumars. If you want health, you worship this. If you want this fame, you can worship this. So they want to make a better situation in this world. We have already discussed how this world is a prison house. If someone wants to go from a C-class cell to B to A-class cell, that's not intelligence. Intelligent is he who wants to get out of the prison house. So therefore, simply trying to improve our situation in the material world through following scriptures by aspiring for some material benefits, is not a very high sign of intelligence. Because what is their motivation for worshipping and following the scriptures? Sakama. Sakama means with strong desire to enjoy facility in this world. As we were discussing the other day. All these scriptures promise Vidyarthi labhate vidyam, dhanarthi labhate dhanam, putrarthi labhate putram. So if you want this, you worship this. If you want this, you worship this. It's like a supermarket. You go and buy this by paying some good karma. So this is also not the best thing. People may do so many austerities, so many vrata, so many japa, tapa, fasting on particular days of the week. They do, especially in Maharashtra. I have seen one particular month. What is that month? Shravana Mas. As seen, even drunkards stop drinking. Meat eaters stop meat eating. That means they know that's not good. But the day that month is over, they go back with vengeance and compensate for the whole month. At least it's a good sign. At least they are able to control and develop a higher taste during that time, which will motivate them. Oh ho, that time for 1 month, I felt very nicely. Let me do again, one more year. Ultimately, they want to do it for 2 months, 3 months, and hopefully they will come to a stage where they want to give up these habits altogether. So once in a week they'll do it, or once in a month they'll do it, or 1 month in a year they try to do some good work. But again, it's like a bathing of an elephant. The elephant goes and takes nice bath in the river, comes out and rolls in the mud again. So it is better than doing nothing, but that's not a very intelligent sign of intelligence. So they follow the scriptures and have some idea of soul. They have some idea of rebirth and God, but they have no clear understanding of who God is. They think that everyone is God. All 33 crore gods are everything. Whether you worship this or this or this, everything is same. They have some idea that, you know, if I do this, then next my life I won't be suffering. So they have some idea of next life. They have some idea of soul, but they have not complete understanding. They perform pious activities, but their desire is to enjoy the fruits immediately. Kankshantaha karmanam siddhim yajanta iha devata. And sure enough, if you worship the devatas, you get results quickly, very quickly. You can feel that. If you do it for 8 weeks, you get this benefit. If you do it for 12 weeks, you get this benefit. It's a fact. They don't know that good and bad karma both are binding. So they are so busy doing the good and forgetting the bad, avoiding the bad. But they don't realize good or bad in the material world, absolutely, I mean, in the absolute sense, both are bad. Just like, I'll give you an example. There was once a Russian scientist, Pavlov. This man developed a conditioning system. He had some rats. He had a rat put in a box and covered the box. He can't escape. The rat cannot escape from the box. And in the box, he made two levers. If you press one lever, if the rat pressed one lever, it would get a sweet to eat. And if it presses another lever, it would get a mild electric shock, which would make it recoil back in distaste. So the rat learned, oh, if I press this lever, sweet. This lever, shock. After some time, this scientist changed the terminals. So the lever which was giving shock gave sweets, and the lever which was giving sweets was giving shock. So, you know, after regular intervals, he would keep on changing it. Ultimately, the rat got so much absorbed. Will it give shock or will it get sweet? And he was trying. When he was so busy to know which is giving sweet and which is giving shock, from behind he opened the box so that the rat can escape. But the rat never looked back. Foolishly, in the box he was trying to avoid shock and get sweet. Forgetting that if he gets out of that box in which he was imprisoned, he can go out and eat whatever he wants. Not only sweet, but so many other things. Similarly, we get so busy, good karma, doing good karma, avoiding bad karma, that we forget that we have to get out of this prison house and go back to the spiritual world of no birth, old age, disease and death. So, that's not a sign of intelligence. They forget the supreme goal of life, that is attaining eternal pleasure. Next. Then why did Krishna recommend this process? It is meant for gradual upliftment, not an end in itself. Just like if government want everyone to become highly educated, why do you have nursery school? If everyone ultimately should become a PhD, then have only PhD classes. Why have nursery? Why have primary? No. To go there, you have to start somewhere. Not all are on that platform. So to encourage, the nursery school is there and primary school is there. But just because they are there, if someone says, it is so easy and nice, I want to permanently stay in nursery, that's not an intelligence. It is meant for gradual upliftment. Ultimately, if you are climbing the stairs, you have to keep a step ahead and lift your leg from the situation where you are. After years, if you are sitting on the same staircase or in the same class, this is not a sign of intelligence. So one should always advance to the next level and not get stuck at the same level where one is. Then, karma, but nishkama. Kama means material desire and nishkama means without material desire. Without material desire. So, that is the beginning of karma yoga. Because yoga means sacrificing the fruit of one's activity. Karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phala heturbhuhu mate sangostu akarmani. Four principles are there. Karmani eva adhikaraste. You have a right to perform your duty. That means you must perform your duty. Adhikar, you have adhikar, you must perform. But ma phaleshu kadachana. Don't expect the result or the fruit. If the fruit is not there, then I won't work. No, then that's not a duty. Just like a mother, if she has given birth to a child, she takes care of the child. She knows, maybe the child will not be grateful and walk away from home and may not take care. That is his problem. But my duty, having given birth, is to provide for his or her necessities. This is my duty, whether I get some reciprocation or not. That's why it is called kartavya. Kartavya means I must do whether I get the benefit or not. That is the sense of duty. Duty means you must do even if there is no fruit, if there is no benefit. That's called kartavya. So karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana. But suppose you do the duty and you get lot of praise, lot of glories, lot of name and fame, and you start thinking, see, I am such a dutiful person, I am such a great personality, actually the whole world should worship me, I am the wonderful example. No, ma karma phala hetur bhuhu. Don't think yourself to be the result or the cause of the result of your activity. Sometimes two people may do the same work with the same desire, with the same endeavor. One fellow gets a result, one fellow doesn't. How, why? Two people do a work, two people open a business, neighbors, same endeavor, same investment, same intelligence, same kind of technique, tactics. One fellow becomes a millionaire, another fellow has to close down his shutter. Why? There's no success business formula that if you follow this, you have to get. No. Ma karma phala. Ma means don't. Karma phala hetu. Don't think yourself to be the cause of the result of your activity. Sometimes the result may come, it may not come. You just perform. But then if you are not the cause and if the result is destined, it will come. And if it is not destined, it won't come. Then why work? Then there is a government office. It will become like government office. put your coat on the chair. That is your attendance. That's all. Anyway, salary is going to come at the end of the month. Or not coming, whatever. Government has decided not to pay for 11 months. So do or not do, nothing is coming. Therefore, there is no motivation to work. Therefore, he says, don't become lazy. Mate sangostu akarmani. Don't be attached to not doing your work. So this is called karma yoga. When the offering of the result is to the Supreme. Whatever I do, it is offered to the Lord. Whether he reciprocates or not, that's not. My job is to offer it. But there is a difficulty. You may get attached to the work itself. I like to work like this. Only in this way. So there is as slightly better than the previous one. At least he is detached from the fruits. And simultaneously performs it as a duty. So this is called Nishkama Karma. This is a better than Sakama Karma. Then there is next Jnana Yoga. Jnana means when you start performing the results and you suppose get a lot of results, then you start thinking, even if I go to Indra Loka, suppose I get all the facilities in this world, I get a beautiful house, I get good family members, I get good everything, but ultimately I have to die and everything will be finished. If I do good activity, even if I go to Swargaloka and I become Indra, suppose, I can enjoy for many, many years, but ultimately even that is finishing, because the whole material world is Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, temporary and miserable. Therefore, those who are little intelligent, higher than, basically there are two kinds of people. The first kind of people are those who have no understanding of what is beyond this world. They think this world is all in all. And therefore, as much as possible, as long as possible, they want to enjoy this world. And they work towards how to enjoy this world. They are called karmis. There are those people who realize from the bottom of their heart that from Brahma Loka down to the Patala Loka, every place is a place of misery. And including this body anyway is going to die. Therefore, what remains in their heart is an indifference. Indifference means they are least bothered. Let somebody die, let money come or not come. I have nothing to do. Ultimately, this world is useless. Ultimately, this thing is, there is nothing. So, a dry renunciation comes. Very dry. What is this world? Ultimately, everything is going to be finished. So, there is no motivation to work. They just want to sit at one place, sit and meditate, do nothing. Their heart becomes very hard. And some who are think themselves to be a little extra smart, they start speculating, you know, pushing, doing some mental gymnastics. Oh, I think actually that this whole world is illusion, but I am God. Maybe if I become liberated, then everything is void. They think that God has no name, God has no form, everything is God. You are God, I am God, light is God, fan is God, wall is God, everything is God. So many different kinds of concocted ideas they extract in the name of scriptures. But then they are very dry people. There is no, because they feel that everything is ultimately going to be finished. So they are like the Jnanis, the impersonal. They feel that God has no name, God has no form, God has no qualities, God has no abode. This world is all in all and everything is illusory and temporary. It's a dream. Next. But Krishna declares in the Bhagavad Gita that this path is very troublesome. You can't enjoy in this world and you will suffer even later. And their goal of life is to kill their existence and merge into nothingness. Shunyavad, void, nirvana. They have no interest of things of this world. They are just, you know, like stones, literally. No feelings, no emotions. This is like the jnani types. They think that ultimately everything is Brahman, all-pervading. But they can be promoted to the higher realm of bhakti yoga if they meet with some bhakta or a devotee. We will discuss that next. So this is called jnana yoga. Next. Then there is ashtanga yoga. You may have seen some people pressing their nose, going to the Himalayas, standing on their heads. You know, so many asanas they do. In fact, it is recommended in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga. Ashta means eight. Anga means limbs. What is the ashtanga? Yama, niyama, asana, pranayam, pratyahar, dharana, dhyana and samadhi. These are the ashtanga, eight limbs. So, beginning from strict rules and regulations until they achieve the perfection of realizing the Lord within their heart, they go step by step. But the problem is, what is this? This is a mechanical meditative process for controlling mind and senses, for focusing on the Supreme within the heart. No dhyana, they sit and try to meditate within. But then, next, it is very difficult to practice in this day and age. You can't practice this Ashtanga yoga in city like Bombay. You have to go to some holy place. You have to go to maybe the Himalayas or some holy places. That means you have to renounce this world. You have to go to some holy place. Sitau deshe pratishthapya. Sthiram asanama. There you have to establish a asana and sit there. And tatraikagram manah kritva. For hours and hours you have to just focus your mind on one place. And you have to become 100% celibate. That means you can't have your wife and children and then practice this yoga. You have to be 100% brahmachari. And brahmacharya doesn't mean an unmarried bachelor simply because he hasn't found a suitable partner. No, brahmachari means by mind, by words, by thought, he has totally given up sex life. So we find that in this day and age, in fact, Arjun, 5,000 years ago, the best of human beings, who had such power to control his mind and senses, even he said, Krishna, I can't practice this because my mind is very restless. Chanchalami manak Krishna pramathi balavadridham. My mind is restless. My mind is very agitating. My mind is very strong. It will pull me to do so many activities. I can't do this process. So if he can't do, there is chance for us Kali Yuga people to control our mind and senses and not be agitated. So though it's a bona fide process, it's very, very difficult, practically impossible in this day and age. And even if you practice, sometimes you get so many powers. If you practice this Ashtanga yoga, you can get some powers. You can control people's lives. You can control their mind. You can walk on water. You can just elevate yourself in the air. You can become smaller than the smallest. You can become stronger than the strongest, or you know, like heavier than the heaviest. Ashta Siddhi. Hanumanji had all these things. He became smaller than the smallest when he went to Lanka. He became small and entered. Then one time he became so big, you know, when a Rakshasi was about to devour. He became 100 yojan long, bigger than the biggest. Then sometimes he would make his body so heavy that even 10 cranes cannot lift it. He demonstrated it once to crush the pride of Bhima. He put his, like an old monkey was sitting and he put his tail on the road. And Bhima, such a powerful personality, he said, hey monkey, move your tail. He said, no, I'm too old, I can't lift my tail, please you lift it. And Bhima tried with all his might. He would throw elephants miles off. And this fellow just couldn't move a millimeter. Then he understood, my God, this person is not an ordinary, he's a big yogi. He says, who are you? Then Hanuman revealed himself. So he demonstrated all these things. But Hanumanji was not interested in all these things. He was interested in chanting the name of Lord Ram. He can give you all this if you want. Ashta Siddhi Navanidhi Keta, we will discuss the other day. He can give you all these things if you want. If he can give you something, that means he is not interested in all this. What do you throw in the dustbin? What you don't want? He can give you, but you have to ask, what is the real sin? So there is a danger, even if you get. And when you start controlling people's lives and their minds, you start thinking you are God. Today we find there are so many yogis who come from, after some amount of little tapasya, and they can read your mind, and they can tell you what you were, or what you are doing, what you are thinking. And people start, my God, you are God. And they think, yeah, actually I never realized, I think I am God. And tomorrow they become avatars.